I'm Michael, and welcome to What We're Watching, Beyond the Screenplay's patron-exclusive podcast where we watch a limited series week by week. Today we are talking about the first two episodes of Foundation, the Apple TV Plus series. I'm joined by the Beyond the Screenplay team, Trisha Aran.
Hello, everyone.
Brian Bittner.
Hello, hello.
And Alex Calleros.
Hi.
So if you missed the announcement in our most recent episode, we are doing this. So like what we did with our Loki watch-along series, week by week, you can listen to us react as the season plays out, and we share our thoughts on what's working, what's not, the challenges of adapting this material. There's lots of stuff that we can get into, but we're excited to try something that's a kind of a different format. So this episode is obviously public to everybody else, and then moving forward, all the episodes will be for $5 and up patrons. So head over to the Beyond the Screenplay Patreon to sign up if you want to continue along with us. So Foundation, the first two episodes have dropped, and so it's a sci-fi series, and the plot is really interesting and unique. I'm trying to even figure out how I would summarize it, but basically Jared Harris, who I love always, plays this character named Harry Seldon, and he's developed something called psychohistory, where he can predict the future of big societies, basically, where like you can't predict the future of individuals because individuals are too random, but at macro scales in the sci-fi future, you can predict how empires will trend and will they fall and all this stuff. And so it's him and his followers kind of trying to not even stop the fall from happening, but shorten the dark ages that will be coming is kind of the big premise. And then Lee Pace is there as like emperor of the universe, struggling to do empire things, basically.
Yep.
So I kind of, my introduction to this series was through Sage Hyden's video, our friend Sage from Just Right, where he talks about sociological storytelling and differences between that and psychological storytelling, and uses Game of Thrones and this article that came out. So I want to talk about that because I think that's a really fun framework. But first, I want to just get initial hits from you guys. So these first two episodes, what are we thinking? What are we feeling? Brian?
Yeah, it was interesting. I definitely enjoy it overall. It's a very pretty show to look at. You know, it's nice production and everything. The first half hour of the first episode felt very just breakneck exposition. Here are people over here and this person over here and da-da-da. And that was a little tricky for me just to really get my bearings. And then once we really settled down with Gail and Harry and Rach, I was like, okay, like now there are characters I can look at and know what they want and know, okay, they're going to be executed, but like now they're not. Okay, cool. Like I can get behind this. So yeah, I would say by the end of the second episode, I was like, okay, cool. I'm on board. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next. If I have anything negative to say about it in general, is that it weirdly looks like TV, which it's a weird thing to say for a show that looks so gorgeous and big and stuff. But do you know, like 20 years ago, you could watch 30 seconds of something on TV and know if it was TV or a movie, not just because of aspect ratio or whatever, but it was like whatever the difference is of camera or frame rate or production or whatever, you could just tell. And I feel like that's not really the case too much anymore. Like Falcon and Winter Soldier, I probably would not be able to tell you if that was a movie or TV just based on like looking at a little bit of it. But for as high production as this is, I was like, it feels like TV in a way that TV doesn't feel anymore. And that's strange for a show that's so big and you know, again, so gorgeous. There's something about it that's not quite feeling like up to snuff with with a modern series. But in terms of just the overall storytelling and stuff, I'm enjoying it and I'm looking forward to hanging with you guys every week and talking about it.
Yeah. And I feel like that's one of the things I look forward to talking about as the show progresses, is this meta thing of TV, but really expensive TV for streaming stuff, but still TV. But is it like what, you know, this was what was really fun talking about Loki also. It's like,
right,
the bending and twisting that's happening in these new forms and what it allows and what works and what doesn't, I think will be really interesting to continue examining. Alex, initial thoughts, because you've read part of the book.
Yeah, I didn't quite, my timing didn't work out. I'm like two thirds of the way through of the first Foundation book. But it was interesting reading the original Foundation book. It's part of a larger series, and I know this show is drawing on the entire series. So I don't know much outside of what I've read so far, but it was interesting reading the book because it was written in the 50s. You know, this is this is part of like a moment in time when there were people like Arthur C. Clarke, Isaac Asimov. They're like doing serious.
Bill Kiddick.
Yeah. They're doing
Ray Bradbury.
All these guys. And it was this moment where science fiction was leaving the realm of kind of like pulp, serialized, you know, considered not really high art. And there was this group of people like Isaac Asimov that were making really intelligent, like sociological, you know, commenting on society kind of science fiction. And this book is so that, like, it's so not about following any individual character for very long on a journey of change. It's about basically jumping through time, you know, every like kind of section of the book jumps like ahead like 30, 50 years. So you don't really have a continuity of characters. It's also because it was written in the 50s, everybody is a man. Like there's like women like don't exist in the galaxy. Like there's just no women and people are smoking cigars. Like, you know, every scene, every meeting is like, would you like a cigar, sir? And, you know, they receive via some very high tech device, like a roll of paper to read, you know, like it's the 50s idea of sci-fi where, you know, we can't imagine not using paper anymore, but we can imagine some other overly complicated device to get the paper to you. So it was very funny to read in that way because it's like both kind of brilliant and intelligent in thinking world building and thinking about the idea of psychohistory, which is what the Jared Harris character is an expert in. The idea of what if in this hypothetical future you could have enough data to essentially have an equation for a society and like predict what's going to happen to like a 99.9%. accuracy. What are the ramifications of that politically and socially? So really cool questions it's raising, hard to kind of get through the surface of this like outdated feeling world, like because of when it was written. Anyway, so that's been my experience with the book. So I was really curious how they were going to handle any of this in like a 2021 TV show. And I do to really credit, you know, the series creator David S. Goyer. Like he did a lot to bring characters and, you know, kind of plot turning points and settings into a more modern context where you've got characters like Gal Dornick, who were just like default white man in the book, are played by women of color, and she's great. You have a lot of gender switching. You have, you know, there's like a cold open with a character that's going to come back later, Salvor Hardin, the kind of that woman who's like keeping watch over the mysterious device on Terminus. That was also a male character in the books. So that was cool to see. It's like, okay, yeah, like women exist and they're going to be some of the main characters. And it's totally fine to switch gender, race, all these things because the characters in the books are just exposition devices half the time. They're just saying the information that needs to be known. So I really like what he's done as far as the characters and updating it. I love the way the first episode looks. I think the visual effects are really cool. And I like the way the space is shot in a lot of this. Static, but beautifully composed space images. There was a moment in time with like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek feel where it's like we're zooming and like the camera's got like some dirt on it and like the lens flares are happening everywhere. And this is kind of more of an elegant, you know, 2001 A Space Odyssey kind of framing of space, which I really like, and with modern visual effects. And I think a lot of that comes from the first episode being directed by Rupert Sanders, who he's an interesting director who did like Snow White and the Huntsman, which is like a very kind of strange movie, but looks gorgeous, and its use of visual effects is very well done. So he's very good with visual effects and with kind of having a beautiful fantasy sci-fi kind of world, creating that visually. So anyway, all those things I really liked. I'll finish with my quick hit in a second. The show did start to worry me in the second episode, because the second episode felt like we were settling in for something that I'm not sure the source material supports, which is we are going to try to follow these characters in a more like day-to-day way. Like, they're on this journey towards Terminus. That's all skipped over in the book. Like, nothing in episode two is at least in the first Foundation book. And I could just feel we're starting to like get further from the source material, and we're having to now invent like problems of the week and kind of like more typical TV trope things that I've been really enjoying a lot of series recently that are truly limited series, where there doesn't need to be like filler episodes, or we got to have like a story of the week that like resolves itself within this episode. It can be just one big story, like a novel that is like over the course of a season. And I got a little worried with the second episode. That's like, okay, like this is not a limited series. There are they do want this to be their Game of Thrones. They want it to go on for 8 seasons. So are we going to have storylines and episodes that feel more like, now we're moving more into like a sci-fi channel realm, where like, this is kind of a story of the week on this like obvious set that is a spaceship. And that is not as much what I'm excited for. The first episode felt more like what my jam, which is like, we're being really efficient. Mm-hmm. We're doing a lot in this short amount of time, and it looks amazing. Let's go off to the races now. And the second episode for me was like, oh, this doesn't feel like off to the races. This feels like pumping the brakes and wasting my time a little bit. So that's,
but it's
that's,
a spaceship with a pool on it, Alex.
Right.
There's a pool on the spaceship.
Why are we watching her swim laps so many times?
Because we built a pool on a spaceship set.
Right. She's still counting those prime numbers while she's swimming.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we can talk about the ending of that episode, also not in the book that I've been reading so far.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Sorry. That was a lot. That is my opening salvo of Foundation thoughts.
Love it.
You may not speak for the rest of the episode.
Cool. Okay. Well, yeah, Trisha, let's get you in here.
Yeah. I actually really appreciate all of that, Alex, because I bought the Foundation trilogy in paperback to read this summer and went ahead and didn't read any of it. I just did not fit into everything else that I had going on. And so like, I'm looking at my copy of it right now. It's sitting on my desk, just giving me this judgmental glare of like, you didn't even crack the cover. I'm so sorry.
Books do that.
I know, but I am very interested to hear about the relationship between the book and the movie, even just thematic, the series, even just thematically, because as I've been watching, these two episodes, I've thought a lot about the form that, as you were mentioning, Michael, like, what is this? Is it, how short is it supposed to be? What kind of storytelling is it going to be? Who are the central characters? Do we need central characters? Is this going to be like a big sprawling, almost anthology kind of thing where we're just in different places in the universe and all of this stuff? I've been thinking a lot about that and really wondering what all of this, like what ties it all together thematically. And there's not much in the first two episodes. And that kind of has been my problem so far. I really agree with everything you guys have said. Like, it's super beautiful to look at. The performances are great. I will watch Jared Harris and Lee Pace do anything. And they're doing a great job here. I mean, is there anybody that you could think of that you could cast that would be like a better emperor than like Lee Pace in this moment? Just
right. He's arrogant, beautiful right. emperor.
So yeah. tall and broad shouldered. Like Lee Pace is enormous. They put him in this like blue armor that makes him even bigger. And you're just like, yeah, he's the emperor for sure.
We have seen from the Hobbit movies, just, Lee Pace on a throne looking stoic and dissatisfied. It works really well. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And here they have the blue aesthetic from the Guardians of the Galaxy movies that he has. Anyway, he looks great in blue. but yeah, so I like thoroughly agree with everything you guys are saying. There's enough in it that is interesting and well done that I'm for sure fascinated and really going to watch it. But so far, it feels like there's a little bit of a theme-sized hole in the middle of these two episodes that I'm not really sure what it's about. And part of it, I wonder, is because of Gail. So, you know, they give us Gail. She's the narrator of the series. So we open with a voiceover from her. And she doesn't say anything thematic in the opening monologue that I can tell. She kind of is just like, I'm going to talk to you about how big this universe is and there are thousands of planets. Then I move to Terminus. Okay. great. And then when we meet her on her home planet, you know, she's kind of like going to be exiled because like curiosity and science and things are illegal on her water planet. And I'm like, cool. So my question, though, that the series doesn't seem super concerned with is then like, what does she want? Right.
Mm-hmm, right.
So she is fleeing her planet for two reasons. One, she won the math contest. Mm-hmm. Two, people don't like her because she has a brain and thinks for herself and does math. And so, and those are okay reasons to leave somewhere. And there's an okay reason to go to where Harry Seldon is on paper, right? There's a plot reason because she won the math contest. But what does she want? Like, what does she deeply want is kind of my question. Like, does she want a family? Does she want the freedom to be able to talk about math in public, like, and be herself, right? She's looking for like an identity thing potentially, or I don't know, but it's something that the series doesn't seem interested in telling me what it is so far. And so there's that. And then there's like a lot of these big questions about, you know, the Empire and the Dark Ages and how do we rule all the people? Is it with public executions or no public executions?
Future amazing scientific technology world still has public hangings by Pope.
Yeah, it turned into The Handmaid's Tale for a minute and I was like, all right. But so like, I want the series to hold together thematically more than I want it to do anything else. Right. Mm-hmm. And so far it is really not interested in doing themes, at least as far as I can tell. So I hope we get to some of that and where some of this, as we get deeper into it, some of that stuff starts to emerge about what does this say about who we are? Because that's the thing about science fiction, right? It's supposed to explore who we are. I mean, all stories are supposed to do this. Mm-hmm. But sci-fi is really unique. What does this say about who we are as people? And you typically, our relationship to technology and or what it means to be human in our place in the scientific aspects of the world, in our place in the universe, in our place, you know, like in the changing like political landscape, whatever our place is, science fiction deals with that. Who are we in this place in relationship to X, this bigger thing that is happening? And that's kind of what I really want this series to do and get into. So Michael, you seem like you have something, like maybe you have a thematic thing that this move that you noticed.
Well, no.
Okay.
But I feel like there is a bigger idea maybe that it's wanting to explore. And so I want to go back to Sage's video on Just Write. It's called Isaac Asimov, Game of Thrones, How to Write Sociological Stories. And so the framework of that video is based on an article that came out in Scientific American called The Real Reason Fans Hate the Last Season of Game of Thrones. And it sort of, that article goes into, and then Sage explores this idea of two kinds of storytelling. Psychological being the kind that we're more used to, the thing that film does really well, which is like, this story is about a character, and this character is going to go on an emotional journey and change, and by the end of it, they will have changed, and then you can extrapolate out. So like, another example Sage gives in the video was like Star Trek, where it's sci-fi and it is about saving the universe. But in the end, it's got to be Captain Kirk punching the bad guy to death, because that's the story, the psychological, you know, ending of Kirk's journey for sure. That movie. And then sociological storytelling, being basically unconcerned with individuals and more concerned about the bigger systems and how humans as a group respond to the incentives put forth by the institutions in which they live. And so that seems to be what, and that's kind of what you were touching on, Alex, too, of like what Foundation is really about, the books anyway. It's like, what do humans do given a certain system with certain incentives? How will they behave over like large periods of time? And so I think that is interesting and can connect to where we are today as far as like climate change seemed to be like a big parallel that I was picking up of like, how do we react to things when our systems incentivize actions that are not helpful for everybody, basically. Right. And so we'll put the link to this video in the show notes, because I think it's probably not required watching, but I think it'll be an interesting framework for us and for people watching the show, because I'm really fascinated by this idea of how do you tell a sociological story about systems, about governments, about planets over thousands of years? How do you turn that into a compelling TV show? And as you were pointing out, Alex, episode 2 started to reveal maybe they're going to try to mash two things together that maybe don't fit. Like maybe I don't need to know that Gail is in love with Dean Thomas and like, you know, like that individual character stuff does feel hollow for the reasons like you were saying, Trisha, of like, I don't know what that means to her. I didn't know that she was interested in romance whatsoever from the first episode. And so I think that's what I'm really fascinated by and what I'm excited to see the show explore and explore with you guys is like, how are they doing this adaptation? What is working? What is kind of being left behind that is needed? Because I think it's cool that we are reaching out and trying to tell different stories, but they have to be fun, compelling, entertaining stories for people to watch them.
Sure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting with the climate change thing, you know, because Harry does have sort of the Cassandra complex in the first, you know, the first episode, where he's like, I've done the math. I have figured out that this is how long we have as an empire. And they're like, yeah, but we don't understand your math. And it sounds inconvenient and annoying. So we are going to ignore it, which obviously is exactly what you were saying, Michael. Right. But I was thinking about Game of Thrones while watching this. Not just because Dorne Martell is in it or because there's a fake Littlefinger character, but because it just sort of had that feel of like, oh, here's what these characters are doing over here. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I didn't even remember that Sage's video was also about Game of Thrones and the sociological thing. But it made me think about the fourth book in Song of Ice and Fire, A Feast for Crows, where the first book you have six POV characters. You've got four Starks and a Lannister and a Targaryen, and they're the Lannister and the Targaryen who you are empathizing with, Daenerys and Tyrion. And then like each book is kind of like, but what if Jaime became a character? And you're like, oh, that's challenging. And then it's like, what if Cersei? You're like, that's really challenging. But it's sort of forcing you to kind of at least understand where these characters are coming from. But the fourth book does something really interesting, which is that it has its normal POV characters, but then it tells the Greyjoy and Martell stories by having a different POV character every time we revisit that part of the map, basically. Hmm. So we have a person who we are meeting for the first time, and we are finding out that, you know, he loves this girl and he's going to see her, but then he finds this thing that happens, and then they see that he's watching, and then they kill him and he is gone forever. But we as the reader are getting a little peek into that society of like how they're building this world by sort of checking in with these different characters who are like on some of them are deeply ensconced in it, some are on the outside. But, and this is where it comes back to Foundation, is you need to have a character who you care about, who wants things. And that's what those do. So to your point, Alex, like, obviously I don't want one of those chapters from Game of Thrones or an episode of Foundation to just be narration about what a people's are doing.
Right.
And then, you know, the king decided that these people should go, and then they went over there, and then this thing happened. Like, you can only do that for so long before you just completely check out. Like, we do as film watchers, we do need to say, okay, who is our protagonist? Who are we rooting for? What do they want? What is the actual, what's going on in this scene? And we're still struggling to find out what some characters want with Foundation, but I feel myself being more attracted to it when I feel like I am just like settled in with some characters and I know what they want. Then when a big world thing happens, I feel more interested in it because I can see how it affects the characters rather than just, oh, you showed me a thing and now you're showing me another thing.
Right.
So yeah, that was what I was thinking about while watching all this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking in terms of theme, or just in terms of this relationship between sociological storytelling versus like psychological storytelling, this really reminded me of two things. And the first is The Martian Chronicles, which is a book by Ray Bradbury that was written almost at exactly the same moment as the Foundation series by Isaac Asimov. The Martian Chronicles was published in 1950. And it sounds like it's a book series, but it's not. It's just one novel. And it's actually not that long. You can sit down and read it probably in like one sitting or two. I really, really recommend it. It's one of my favorite Bradbury things. I'm a really big Bradbury fan. But it is a book that's more like a series of short stories where every chapter is about somebody totally different. But they're all on Mars, basically. So like the first chapter is like, and then here's when we first landed on Mars as humans. And then in the next chapter is here's when we first encountered the Martians. And it was, you know, 100 years later. And then it was like, here's the fall of our civilization on Mars. And it's like 200 years later or whatever. So none of the same characters exist throughout it. But it's all sort of thematically about the same thing. And it's sort of in scope, relatively small, right? It's all just on one planet. And it's sort of about humans and their interactions with this planet that existed before they got there and like exists long past their civilization on the planet. And what it mines thematically is the communication like piece and or breakdown of like, we landed here, there was a civilization here, and here was how our cultures did not communicate with each other. Or here's like, there's this running theme of like how we succeeded, how humans succeeded or failed at actually communicating with a culture that was so different from theirs, you know? Really, really recommend that. And I think that that's a really great example of how to do this kind of story, where it's like, if you can keep the scope pretty narrow and the theme like is kind of what can tie the different characters together. It's like, I can see in every single one of those chapters how communication is at the heart of, or lack of communication is at the heart of the conflict, right? And this also reminds me of Mad Men. Is another example of how to do sort of sociological storytelling, because Mad Men thematically is about, here are the 1960s in the United States, right? And here are all of these people that are dealing with different issues that were rapidly changing during the 1960s. And here's how it affected them and changed some of them and also didn't change them in some ways, right? And, you know, they fell back into their same old patterns despite the fact that the world was changing around them. And so that's kind of why I love Mad Men, is that even though it is a true ensemble, it's thematically really tightly held together, again, by a pretty narrow scope of time, And there are characters that you can really dive into their psychology. So I feel like it maybe is walking the line between those two.
Also ties with, you know, something like Chernobyl, where it's
exactly this, I was thinking about
this
Chernobyl
big
too.
Cataclysmic event can kill Jared Harris.
Man, he really does not make it through anything, does he? Oh, Jesus,
new Sean Bean.
I was gonna, yeah, it's like
new
it's
Sean Bean thing all over again.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm just
I need a movie between where Sean Bean and Jared Harris face off, and you like. It's going to be the most tense thing possible because, like, who's going to die? You don't
probably
like,
both of them, to be
probably
honest.
Probably both of them. Right. Yeah.
Anyway, I think that this actually is really capable of doing that, and maybe focusing on some like a smaller handful of characters is going to give us more of a Mad Men effect. And I'm really hoping, you know, if the scope has to be as big as it has to be, then maybe the cast of characters can kind of keep us thematically grounded a little bit.
Right.
So I have some thoughts on all that from what I've read so far of the book.
Great.
Because, you know, in the book, I did ended up getting pretty into it once I was deeper into some of these stories that happen 30, 50 years down the line from the initial like Harry Seldon scenes. And why they became interesting is because you are with just a group of characters for that chapter, for that, you know, that book within a book. And it's usually a political crisis is happening that is kind of maybe a turning point at this stage of the breakdown or the kind of comeback from the fall. So it's, there are these really compelling, basically anthology stories in the Foundation book. And I think I would imagine the whole series is somewhat built like that. Maybe the other books are more real time with certain characters for more of the book, but I do almost wish I can't say for sure without knowing the entire series and what the rest of the series is like, but the first book does point to anthology series. And I think that's almost kind of more what I would want from a Foundation adaptation, but there seems to be an attempt to try to make it Game of Thrones where you do stick with certain characters and you don't have that kind of disconnect from episode to episode.
Maybe the third episode will just launch us into something totally new and we might just like check back in with Gail here and there.
I imagine it's going to change over the course of the season.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Or it could be an interesting thing where instead of being an anthology show like True Detective, it's sort of being like each season is telling this group of characters' story. And then the next season we're jumping forward to like, you know, 100 years later or something.
That would make a lot of sense. Yeah.
You can always have Lee Pace play the Cleon clone, which is nice.
He will be there forever.
Right. I was going to say that's one of the kind of, you know, brilliant strokes. If you are going to tell the story that has to span lots of time, one character is just always a clone.
Immortal.
So
yep.
It's just right.
Like and that was invented for the show.
And
now I'm realizing why. That makes a lot of sense.
So they literally just ripped it off Dark. like the unholy trinity of three guys who are the same person at three different ages.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I thought Dark was inspired by the book, but yeah.
Well, and I believe Sage mentions in his video that the original Foundation book was a collection of short stories published in scientific magazines over several.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
That's that also makes sense. Why it lends itself to that thing. And that's, you know, to kind of close out by bringing it back to that article and the comparison of Game of Thrones and what changed in Game of Thrones is that one of the hallmarks of sociological storytelling is that characters can come and go. They can die and the story continues because it's not hanging on the investment in that one character. And that's something that Game of Thrones famously does super well for several of its early seasons. And then at some point, people became so invested in the characters that had lasted that killing them would feel like, why am I watching the show if X person isn't there anymore? Yada, yada. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how this show handles that and do characters stick around? Because it seems like they really want us to invest in at least one person, our protagonist, Gail. So will she persist, etc.?
Right.
Well, Jared Harris is listed on IMDb as being in 10 episodes of this show.
Right.
So, I'm...
Or credited in 10 episodes.
He's credited, that's true. Right. And that could just be a contractual thing. But I would bet that he'll exist in some other form, right? So like we're going to get a hologram or a flashback.
Some
or like
practical hologram.
Yeah, exactly. Or a clone. I feel like we're going to get more Jarios.
I will say the character of Hari Seldon remains important throughout the entirety of the first book of Foundation.
Uh-huh. Okay. Good to know. Cool.
Yeah. And the last thing that I'm excited for next week and the next couple episodes, because the director of those episodes is Alex Graves, who is like one of the TV directors I really like, going back to, I think he might have been the first like TV directors like whose name I knew, because he directed a bunch of my favorite episodes of The West Wing, In Excelsis Deo, 17 People, Commencement, for the West Wing nerds out there, like literally three of my favorites, and also directed several Game of Thrones episodes in seasons 3 and 4. So I'm curious to see what that vision will bring to it and how this story will evolve.
The main thing I'm curious about is to see what's in the vault. And I feel like they might be holding that back maybe until like some of the last episodes, because it seems like they're kind of using it as a frame. And it was like, and then this is happening with the vault. And then here she is. She's going to go look in the vault and it's going to change everything. Like, they might not show me for a long time because they built a mystery box. There's built a really big one that floats in the air and you can't get in it. And it worked on me. So.
Right. Nice. I just want to have a quick dialogue note and just a thing people say, which is that non-zero chance means chance.
I like non-zero chance.
I know you do.
Yeah. Well, it's something mathematicians would say.
Yeah,
Brian.
It's a mathy thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Or it's just one of those things you say when you want to add extra syllables to your word. Like, it's a torrential downpour outside. You mean it's raining? Like, it's just a downpour.
Like, I feel like the equivalent phrase would be like, there's a slight chance. There's a non-zero chance. It's a tiny little, it's
slightly more than zero
window. Yeah. So thank you.
When Jared Harris says it, it works for me. Just
same.
Like, yeah.
Although the one line I really did like was when Lee Pace was talking to Brother Dusk and referred to him as, Brother Dawn, and said a younger grape from the same vine destined for the same old bottle. I was like, all right.
Yeah, that was
that was a cool line.
Love it.
Well, yeah, I'm sure this will be a continuing theme in the series, but one theme that I did pick up in that first episode was the genetic dynasty as a visual, literal representation of a system that won't change with the times.
Yeah.
You know, a system that won't evolve, that remains static, is going to collapse at some point. So I think there are themes here, but I agree that across these two episodes, I don't understand why these character stories are all happening towards
one thing.
They're more like
ideas than themes.
Right.
So far.
Right.
Yeah. Well, but, and I was, now that you mentioned that, Alex, I was really struck by, you know, one of the very last scenes of this second episode, which is when the robot assistant of
the replicant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When she's standing there and talking with Brother Dawn, and he's like, how often does it go this way? How often do we choose this, right? About the public executions. And she's like, we always choose this, or like, you always choose this. In other words, this sort of idea that things have not changed for so long. It's a system that is like reluctant or refusing to change, regardless of the specifics of the predicament, right? Where she's like, the choices won't always be like this. It's, you know, the difference between clemency and, you know, this wrath, I guess, or punishment. But she kind of has the conclusion of, but you, you know, the genetic clone that you are, always go this way. So
Speaking really quickly of executions and shocking things, I was pretty taken aback by the ending of episode 2 with Raish like violently stabbing his father figure.
What the hell?
And apologizing and saying I love you while shooting her into space, into like an asteroid field. That was also kind of a bump for me, where it was like, are you doing a Game of Thrones thing of like, look how shocking it all is.
We just killed the guy.
But we haven't like earned this yet. Like, I haven't spent enough time in this world with these characters for this to feel that meaningful. It just feels more like shocking television moments. And once again, it's like, I don't think this is supported by the books, or it hasn't been so far in what I've read. So it does feel like they just had to do the shocker. We're going to release the first two episodes. Things are so shocking and bad. What's going to happen next? And I am curious to see like how they explain all this and how they resolve it. But I, as a book reader, I was definitely taken aback by that finale.
Right.
How, what did it feel like to you guys, that, that last scene?
It felt, I would say it felt unexciting to me. Like it just sort of, it felt, I guess, like unearned. Like it was just like, here's a thing that is happening, not a thing that like, oh my gosh, like I feel so taken aback because I was expecting this. It just sort of felt like it was like, here's a new event we're showing you. Like, all right.
Well, just as a reminder that choices feel meaningful when we understand the position the characters are in and the pressures that are working on them.
Right.
What position was Raish in?
Right. We have no idea what's going on. Like, what was his mission? Was like, did Hari Seldon give him the mission? You must stab me violently so that like psycho history can unfold. Like, you couldn't have killed me. You couldn't have killed me in a nicer way. Like, I'm curious. Like, what I feel like it's the kind of show that will give us a full explanation. I'm just very curious of what it could be and how it will make sense.
Like, and why now? Why in this way?
Yeah.
What?
Like, you're not even to the planet yet. Like,
it didn't seem like you planned it very well. Like, if this was a planned murder, very haphazard. You got like, seen.
Yeah, Raish seems surprised when she sees him. Like, were you always planning to shoot her out into a space pod or just because she saw you? Or,
lots of follow-up questions.
Yes,
definitely a lot of whiplash and things not making a ton of sense. And I was also feeling that thing, like you were saying, Alex, of the, we need to do Game of Thrones, so we need to have the big public execution scene of like where you kind of only sort of know who these people are or why you care. So it does feel like the show is kind of rushing to get to some of those big climactic, like, look, this is like the show where it's big drama and you gotta care, but hasn't spent the time investing in it. I'm hoping that the next couple episodes slow down and focus up and get us invested in like what is actually going on right now.
Right,
and
right.
What do we need to care about for the arc of this season of the show?
Agree.
And a lot of times I will say, a lot of times episode twos are bumpy in a show. Usually there's like the pilot has a lot of care put into it. We got to set up the whole world and all the characters. And a lot of times episode twos are just kind of weird. And so I'm hoping that's the case with Foundation and it kind of figures out where it's going in the rest of the season.
Yeah. Well, we shall see. And if you want to see along with us, listener, head over to the Beyond Screenplay Patreon to sign up. Again, it's the $5 tier to get access to this What We're Watching series. You also get access to video versions of our podcast. Thank you, as always, to the patrons. Thank you to our producer, Vince Major, and our editor, Eric Schneider. I'm Michael Tucker. I've been joined today by Trisha Rand, Brian Bittner, and Alex Callados. We will see you over on Patreon. And this Friday is our episode on Skyfall.
Yay!
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.